estimated 40 heads, more, before I lost count, or lost the heart to count anymore. There had been another club in that town, and it had been worse in some ways because the torture was part of the entertainment. Lines had appeared on the man's skin. The muscles under his skin began to shrink as though he had a wasting disease, but what should have taken months was happening in seconds. No matter how willing the sacrifice, it can still hurt. The man started screaming as fast as he could draw breath. His lungs were working better than the first man's, and he drew breath so fast it was like one continuous shriek. His skin darkened as it drew in and in like something was sucking him dry. It was like watching a balloon shrivel. Except there was muscle, and when the muscle vanished, there was bone, and finally there was nothing but dried skin over bones. And still he screamed. The last insult, or gift, or horror, had been the master of the city of Albuquerque's power. Her power had beat against me like frantic wings, birds crying that they've been shut out in the dark and they want inside to the light and the warmth. How could I leave them crying in the dark when all I had to do was open and they would be safe? I'd fought it, but in the end the wings erupted into a torrent of birds. My body seemed to open, though I knew it didn't. And the winged things, only half-glimpsed, spilled into that opening. The power flowed into me, through me, and out again. I was part of some great circuit, and I felt the connection with every vampire she'd touched. It was as if I flowed through them, and they through me, like water coming together to form something larger. Then I was floating in the soothing dark, and there were stars, distant and glittering. Images, then, and they had force to them like things slamming into my body. I saw the master of the city standing on the top of a pyramid temple surrounded by trees, jungle. I could smell the rich greenness of it and hear the night call of a monkey, the scream of a jaguar. Her human servant knelt and fed from the bloody wound on her chest. He became her servant and he gained power, many powers. And one of them was this: how to take the life force of something, someone, and feed upon it without killing it. And I understood how he'd taken the man's essence during that terrible entertainment. More than that, I understood how it was done and how it was undone. I knew how to unmake the creature in the bar, though what had been done, being sewn together into a Frankenstein nightmare, might mean that to bring them back to flesh would kill them. I didn't need the necromancer who had trapped them to undo the spell. I could do it myself. The memories were so vivid it was like reliving them. I came back to the present almost with a jolt, staring up into Jean-Claude's eyes, still trapped under his body, still in the punishment room, thousands of miles away from Obsidian Butterfly and her small army. But it was the look on Jean-Claude's face that caught my breath in my throat. His eyes were wide, and I knew in that moment that he'd seen my memories, that he'd shared them the way I sometimes shared his. Fuck. His voice had a shakiness to it that I rarely heard.
Ma petite, you were a busy girl while you were away from us.
You know what I saw, and you know how I feel about what you did to Gretchen. His hands tightened on my arms, fingers digging into my skin just a little.
I know how you feel, ma petite, but I will not take this blame gently. I am the master of the city. My vampires live through me. Unless they are masters themselves, their life force comes through the line that bred them, until they take blood oath to a master of the city. Then that master makes their hearts beat. If I run short of power, then some will simply not wake in the night, or they will become revenants. Animals to be destroyed as Demian has become.
I moved under him.
I don't... Shh, ma petite. I will not be condemned without a hearing, not this time. Perhaps you can save Demian, but he is over 1,000 years old. Even though not a master, that is a long time, long enough to accumulate power enough to survive. But vampires like Willy and Hannah, who are not masters and not that old, they would fade or go mad. And there would be no saving them.
He shook me, digging into my arms, raising his elbows so that I could have gone for a weapon if I'd wanted. But I just watched him and listened.
Is that what you want, Anita? Which of them would you sacrifice to save Gretchen? Gretchen, whom you hate. I took power from her because you denied it to me.
Don't blame this on me, I said. He moved suddenly, sitting up on his knees, his body straddling my legs. He lifted me into a sitting position, fingers brushing against my arms.
The system of master and servant has worked well for thousands of years, but you keep fighting it, and you keep forcing me to do things I do not wish to do.
He raised me up close to his face, and I watched his eyes bleed to burning blue from inches away. He shook me more violently this time, almost hard enough to scare me.
If I could have fed the ordure as it was meant to be fed, then this would not have been necessary. If I could have fed through my human servant, this would not have been necessary. If I could have fed through my animal to call, this would not have been necessary. But you and Richard bind me round with rules, you cripple me with your morality, and you force me to do such as I swore I would never do. I have been in the box and been food for my master, and it was the worst thing I have ever endured. And now, because you and he had your moral high ground to keep you pure, you have forced me to be more practical than I have ever wanted to be.
He released me so suddenly I fell back against the floor, slamming an elbow into the stones. He stood over me as angry as I'd ever seen him, and I had no anger to give back. I finally said,
I didn't know. That is becoming a poor excuse, ma petite.
He went to the coffin and gazed down at what lay inside.
I gave her my protection once, and this is not protection.
He turned and glared at me.
I do what I must, ma petite, but I take no pleasure from it, and I tire of the necessity of it. If you would but meet me even halfway, we could avoid so much pain.
I sat up, fighting the urge to rub my elbow. Do you want me to say I'm sorry? I am. Do you want permission to feed off of me? Is that it?
The ordure, yes, he said. But in truth, if you are in the mood for it, simply having the marks open and married gains me much.
He held his hand out to Jason, and for one of only a few times I saw Jason hesitate before taking Jean-Claude's hand. Jean-Claude didn't even look at him, as if his obedience was simply a fact like gravity.
If she were stronger, it would be a more dangerous feeding, but she is very weak, so it will not be so very bad.
The words were comforting, but he never looked at Jason as he lowered the younger man's wrist towards what lay in that coffin. I got to my feet, watching Jason's face. He was pale, eyes wide, breath coming too short, too fast. He didn't normally have a problem letting vamps feed on him, but I understood. What lay in that coffin was something out of a nightmare. Most of the time, if you saw a vamp looking like something made of dried sticks, it was well and truly dead. Jason pulled on his arm, keeping himself just out of reach, I think. Jean-Claude turned to him, but there was no anger. He kept the one hand on Jason's arm and the other he touched to his face gently.
Would you have me take your mind before she strikes?
Jason nodded wordlessly. Jean-Claude cradled his hand against Jason's face. They stared into each other's eyes, one of those long, lingering stares like lovers, except I felt the moment that Jason slipped away. I felt his mind release, his will evaporate. His face went slack, his mouth half-parted, eyes fluttering. Jean-Claude kept his hand on the other man's face as he guided the wrist into the coffin. Jason's body tensed, and I knew that Gretchen had bitten him. But his eyes stayed closed, his face pleasant. I found myself beside the coffin without meaning to be. The dried stick hands raised as I watched, clutching at Jason's arm, holding him against the mouth. Jean-Claude moved his hand back as the thing in the coffin pressed Jason's wrist to its mouth. Blood flowed over that brown skin, soaked the white satin pillow, and still that lipless mouth fed. The room was suddenly too warm, almost hot. I turned away and found Micah watching me. I couldn't read his expression, wasn't sure I wanted to. I looked away from whatever was in his eyes. I didn't want to meet anyone's eyes right now. I'd fought so long and so hard not to be what I was. Not to be Jean-Claude's human servant, not to be Richard's Lupa, not to be anything to anyone. Everyone seemed to be paying the price for that. I hated having other people pay the price for my problems. It was against the rules somehow. Jean-Claude's voice drew me back to the coffin.
Drink, Gretchen. Drink of my blood. I gave you life once. Let it be so again.
Jason was sitting slumped beside the coffin, cradling his bloody wrist with a beatific expression on his face. The dried thing was sitting up with Jean-Claude's arm behind its shoulders. It looked better, but still not alive, not even quite real. He offered the pale flesh of his wrist to that lipless mouth, still red with Jason's blood, and it bit down. I heard Jean-Claude sigh, but that was the only sign that it might hurt.
Blood to blood, flesh to flesh.
Jean-Claude spoke the words, and with each word, with each suck of blood, I felt the power grow, felt it curl in my stomach, shorten my breath. Gretchen's body began to stretch and fill. The pieces of hair thickened and began to flow around her. The dried things in her eye sockets filled and began to have a hint of blue to them. When Jean-Claude moved his wrist from her mouth, they were full, pouting lips. She had blue eyes and a wealth of yellow hair. She was thin, her bones showing under the near-translucent paleness of her skin. Her eyes were filled with fire, nothing human. Her hands were still painfully thin, her body fragile, but she looked almost like the vampire that had tried to kill me years ago. He picked her up in his arms. Her body didn't fill out the clothes that hung from her frame.
Breath to breath,
he said, and leaned in towards her. They kissed, and I felt the power pass between them. I knew that that kiss could have drained her life away again, but it didn't. When he raised back from her, her face was full and rounded, human-looking. It was like Prince Charming waking Sleeping Beauty, except that this beauty's eyes found me, and the hatred in them was a burning thing. I sighed. Some people never learn. I met that hateful gaze and said, Gretchen, I promise you two things. You'll never have to go back in that box. And if you try to hurt me or mine again, I'll kill you. And that would be a damn shame since I'm the one who persuaded Jean-Claude to let you out in the first place. She just looked at me the way that tigers behind bars watch the visitors, biding their time. Jean-Claude hugged her to him.
If you try and harm my human servant again, I will see you destroyed, Gretel.
Gretel had been her original name, so I'd been told.
I hear you, Jean-Claude.
Her voice sounded rough, as if the time in the coffin had damaged it.
Come, Jason. We need to warm this one.
Jason got to his feet like an obedient puppy, still bleeding, still happy. Jean-Claude paused in the doorway, looking not at me, but at Asher.
I must take this one to the bath, or all the work will be undone. But Demian is a revenant now.
Asher raised a hand, which had been hidden along his body. He had a gun, a 10-millimeter Browning, the big brother of my own gun.
I will do what needs doing.
We are not going to kill Damien, I said. Jean-Claude looked at me, then at Micah and Nathaniel and Gil and the other were-leopards and even the bodyguards. His gaze seemed to take everyone in, then he looked at me again.
I ask again, ma petite. Who will you sacrifice for your high ideals?
You think he can't be saved, don't you?
I know that once the madness takes a vampire, even the master who bore him cannot always bring him back to his senses.
Is there anything I can do that might bring him back to himself?
Let him feed. Try to see he does not kill that which he eats, and hope when he tastes your blood, he regains his senses. If your blood does not sate him, then Asher will try to feed him. If that fails...
He gave that shrug that meant everything and nothing. Even holding Gretchen, it looked graceful. I don't want him to die because of me.
If he dies, ma petite, it will be because he tried to kill someone in this room."
With that, he walked out, Jason trailing behind. I think perhaps I'd used up Jean-Claude's patience with me, or maybe seeing what he'd done to Gretchen had bothered him that much. Whatever the cause, he left me in the room with everyone looking to me as to how to proceed. And I didn't have a clue. Who was I willing to put next to the coffin? Who was I willing to risk?
56. The answer, of course, was no one, but we finally decided who got to be the first victim. I was pretty useless for the discussion because I would have put myself first in line. Never ask of anyone what you're not willing to do yourself. But Asher pointed out that I couldn't be the first feed if I had any chance of being Damien's master. So they decided among themselves, and it was Zane left standing next to the coffin. Everybody but me that had a gun had it out with a round chambered. I needed my hands free to offer up a body part to get gnawed on. Come to think of it, I didn't much like that job description either. But it wasn't watching Zane's pale back as he unfastened the chain that bothered me. It was watching Cherry's face as she watched him do it. That much fear for someone's safety, that much importance attached to one other being meant that it was love for her, too. They loved each other, and he was about to cry for help, and loose the carrion birds to feed and feed and feed. The lid of the coffin was only half raised when Zane jerked forward, and pale hands showed around him, holding him. Blood sprayed the white satin of the coffin, spattered over Zane's shoulders, and the only thing we could see of Damien was pale hands and arms latched around Zane's back. There was no shot to take. Someone was screaming. I think it was Cherry. I had my gun out, but there was no way to fire without killing Zane first. Micah and Merle were at the coffin, trying to pry Zane free. Zane fell back, his throat a gaping wound, and something that was all bloody fangs and wild red hair grabbed Merle and folded around him, tearing at the big man's throat. The were-rats and Asher were standing back, waiting for a clear shot, but there wasn't going to be one, not before someone else died. I pushed forward, trying to shove Micah out of the way while I pressed the gun to Damien's face, but Micah was trying to pry the vampire off of Merle, and in the struggle I couldn't get my gun steady. The barrel slipped in the blood against Damien's skin, and suddenly green eyes turned to me, and there was nothing in them but hunger. Damien was already dead. I just hadn't pulled the trigger yet. Then he was on me, faster than anything I'd ever seen. I was pressed back against the satin of the coffin, my hips and legs sticking out. He didn't go for my neck. He buried his fangs in my upper chest. I screamed past the pain and pressed the barrel of the Browning against his temple. Asher was yelling, "Don't fire! You'll hit Anita!" I screamed again and had to adjust the angle of the gun, because if I'd pulled the trigger, the bullet would have gone through his head into my chest. I moved the gun a fraction while he savaged me. My finger curled on the trigger when he raised his green eyes to me. I watched his eyes fill up with knowledge, intelligence, with him. He raised his mouth back from my chest. He looked scared.
"Anita, what's happening?"
He seemed to see my bloody chest for the first time, and his eyes went wide.
"What's happening to me?"
The moment he spoke, the moment there was something in him besides monster, I felt the connection between us click into place, like a perfectly tuned string on a harp. The power flowed between us like warm water, filling him up, filling me up, and I drew him down to me, my blood still on his lips. I heard Asher saying,
"Stay back. It's all right. Let her finish."
I whispered as I drew Damien down to me,
"Blood of my blood. Flesh of my flesh, breath to breath, my heart to yours."
And just before our lips met and his fate was sealed, he whispered,
"Yes, oh, yes."
57. I was shoulder deep in water so hot it made my skin pink. I was so hot I was almost ill because I was still fully dressed, including all my guns. Damien leaned up against the front of my body, my arms wrapped around him, holding him close. his body folded in against mine, his arms holding mine across his bare chest. How did I end up being guardian of the bathtub for Damien once we reached my house? He'd gone into convulsions, and only my touch had calmed him. We'd gotten him to my house with Nathaniel riding in the back, cradling Damien. They'd filled the bathtub with hot, hot water, and I'd left Asher in charge of Damien's care. I'd done my part. I'd brought him back to himself. I had a bandage over my left breast to prove that I'd donated my piece of flesh and blood for the night. Zane and Merle were on their way to the Lycanthrope Hospital, with Micah and Cherry to oversee them. Everyone else had trooped back to my house, and everything had seemed fine, until screams from the bathroom brought me running. Damien had been beating himself against the floor, convulsing like he'd tear himself apart, vomiting blood on the tile. Asher and Nathaniel had been fighting to hold him down, to keep him from hurting himself, but they couldn't hold him. I knelt to help, and the moment I touched him, he quieted. I'd withdrawn my hand, and his body had bucked again, hands scrambling at the slick tile. I'd touched his shoulder, and he calmed. We tried letting him take blood from Caleb, but the moment I stopped touching him, his body rejected the blood and everything else. The last time I'd stopped touching him, Damien had simply gone quiet, and I had felt him beginning to fade, to die. We'd dragged Damien into the steaming bathwater, and I'd held him. He had recovered, but only with me holding him while my clothes stuck to my body. "What's wrong with him?" I asked. Asher had answered,
"I've only seen this reaction between master and servant."
"I'm Damien's master, so what? It shouldn't cause this, should it?"
"No, ma chérie, not merely master, but master vampire and human servant."
"Damien is not my master," I said.
"Damien is no one's master,"
Asher said quietly, gazing down at us from the edge of the tub. He was sitting in a pool of the blood that had poured out of Damien. "What are you saying, Asher?"
"You have made him your servant."
"He can't be a human servant, he's a vampire," I said.
"I did not say human servant, ma chérie."
"Then what are you talking about?"
"A vampire servant for a master necromancer, I think."
"You think?" I made it a question.
"We are dealing with things of legend, ma chérie, things that should not be possible. I am having to guess at this."
"Guess?" I said. He sighed.
"If I said that I knew for certain what has happened, it would be a lie. I would never lie to you on purpose."
I had protested, demanded, but nothing I could do or say made it untrue. I had a vampire servant, and that was impossible. But impossible or not, Damien lay against my body, clinging to me like I was the last hope he had. Asher glided back into the bathroom, wearing a beach towel wrapped around him. The towel was big enough to cover him from armpits to mid-calf, effectively hiding his body, hiding the scars.
"My clothes are covered in blood. I hope you do not mind."
I hated wearing bloody clothes myself, so fine. Glad you found a towel you liked. He glanced down at the colorful towel.
"I do not fit in your robe."
I was sorry Asher felt like he had to hide himself away, but I had other things to worry about. I think if I don't get cooler soon, I'm either going to throw up or pass out. He knelt by the tub, smoothing the long towel under his knees in a gesture that you don't see much in men. He touched my face lightly.
"You are flushed,"
he touched Damien.
"His skin is still cooler than it should be."
He frowned.
"You need to take off some of your clothing, especially the jeans, I would think."
Normally I go to great lengths not to be unclothed in front of all the boys, but tonight I was willing to strip down a little. How do I undress and still hold him?
"I believe that one of us could hold him against you while you disrobed."
"You really think that he'll go into convulsions again?"
"You could release him, and we could find out,"
Asher said, voice soft. I shook my head. "I'm tired of cleaning up blood. Just help me hold him." Asher's eyes went a little wide.
"I will call Nathaniel."
The heat had gone to my head in a pounding headache. "Just jump in, Asher. I promise not to peek." He curled beside the tub, tucking every piece of him he could underneath the towel.
"If I dropped this towel to the floor, Would you really not look?
His question stopped me. I opened my mouth, closed it, and tried to think through the heat, the headache, the growing nausea, and finally just said the truth. I wouldn't mean to look, but no, you're right. If you're naked, I'm going to look. I don't think I could stop myself.
Like a car accident, you cannot turn away, he said.
I looked up then and found he'd turned away, hiding his face with that fall of golden hair. Damn it, I didn't have time to hold everybody's hand. Asher, please, I didn't mean that. He wouldn't look at me. I extracted one arm from Damien, who moved around the remaining arm like a child settling in his sleep around his favorite teddy bear. I grabbed Asher's arm through the towel. Yes, I'd look just for sheer curiosity's sake. How could I help it? You've teased and taunted about how bad your injuries are. You've set it up so that I'll have to look, have to see. He was looking at me now, those pale eyes empty, hidden from me. I dug my fingers into his arm, trying to grip him through the towel and finding mostly cloth. But if you don't know by now that I just want to see you nude, then you haven't been paying attention. His face told me nothing, that blank politeness that both he and Jean-Claude could pull off when they wanted to. Now help me get some of these clothes off before I melt. He gave a low, chuckling laugh that danced over my skin and brought my pulse to my throat. I was too hot to have goosebumps.
You offering to disrobe without any magic to push you. I believe that is a first.
I had to laugh because he was right. But the laugh forced me to close my eyes because it felt like the pulsing of the headache was going to shove my eyeballs out of their sockets. I let go of his arm and pressed my hand to my forehead to try and keep my head from falling into pieces.
Please, Asher, I am going to be sick.
I heard the water splashing, felt it push against me as someone climbed into the tub. I opened my eyes slowly, trying to hold the headache inside, and found Nathaniel kneeling in the water. His hair was still bound in a loose braid that trailed behind him, curling through the water like something separate and alive. The swirling braid brought my gaze low on his body, and I had a peripheral sense that Nathaniel wasn't getting any clothes wet whatsoever, but I didn't care. The headache had reached a point where I was afraid I was going to start throwing up if I didn't get cooler. He answered my question without me asking it.
Asher wants Damien to try to take blood again. See if it will stay down.
Asher was still perched on the edge of the tub, wrapped in the towel.
Damien must be able to keep down blood, or he will perish. I believe that if you stay in constant contact with him, that he will be able to keep a feeding down.
If I have to stay in constant contact, then I have to get cooler first.
Nathaniel will help you, he said.
I glanced up at Asher, and even in the dim glow of a nightlight, it hurt my head.
Fine.
Damien made small protesting movements as Nathaniel tried to take some of his weight off of me. We finally leaned him up against the edge of the tub with Asher supporting some of his weight, but letting him keep my arm pressed to his chest. Nathaniel undid my belt and helped me slip the shoulder holster off one arm, but I needed the other arm free to slip it out of the other strap. Damien fought us, slowly, stubbornly, as if he were sleepwalking. But he was a vampire. He could have torn his way through the wall of my bathroom with his bare hands. If he didn't want to let go of my arm, we couldn't make him, not unless we were willing to break his fingers one at a time, and we weren't willing to do that.
What do we do?
Nathaniel asked.
I have to get out of this heat, I said. Can we, like, run cold water in the tub or something?
No,
Asher said.
We must keep him as warm as possible until after he has retained some of the blood. We don't dare allow him to be chilled.
Then get these clothes off me.
I felt, rather than saw, the two of them exchange glances.
How do you want me to do it?
Nathaniel asked. I leaned my head forward, resting against the top of Damien's wet hair. His skin was the coldest thing in the tub. I was so hot I was about to be sick, yet Damien's skin was still cool to the touch. The headache overwhelmed me and spilled out my mouth. I did my best to crawl out on the edge of the tub before I vomited. Damien had managed to miss the water every time he threw up. At least I could do the same. But he clung to me, and only Asher's hand on my arm kept me high enough from the water to keep it clean. My head was screaming, the pain so strong that it impacted my vision in explosions of color. Asher got me a cool cloth and wiped my mouth. He laid another cool cloth across my forehead. Then Nathaniel gripped the back of my shirt and ripped. He tore it off of me in pieces. Asher draped a wet towel over my shoulders that was so cold it made me whisper, "Shit." Asher and Nathaniel took my weight and Damien's and moved us back to the far edge of the tub as Gil came in and started cleaning up the mess. Gil had cleaned up a lot of messes tonight, and he'd never bitched, not once. He did a double take at the pieces of my shirt floating in the water, but never commented aloud. He made a good flunky. Did what he was told and didn't ask questions. Nathaniel tried to tear my jeans off the way he'd done the shirt. He managed to rip the top, but Damien's weight kept pushing me under the water, and he couldn't get the leverage he needed. Asher fastened the towel as securely as he could and climbed gingerly into the water. He knelt and slid his arms around Damien and me and lifted, standing, holding us both upright. I was still touching bottom, but he was still holding both our weights because my legs still weren't working quite right. He held us both effortlessly. Nathaniel put a hand on either side of the rip he'd made in my jeans and pulled. The heavy, wet cloth came apart under his hands with a sound like tearing flesh, but heavier, a wet, harsh sound. The force of it jerked my body, and only Asher's strength kept me standing. I felt the air on my bare skin and realized that in ripping away the jeans, he'd taken my undies with them, but I didn't care. The air on my skin was still suffocatingly hot. I couldn't breathe. The last thing I remember thinking was, I'm going to pass out. Then, nothing. 58. I woke lying on the edge of the tub with only one arm in the water with Damien. Cold towels covered me from head to foot. The one on my face lifted, and I saw that Nathaniel was in the water holding Damien upright. I blinked up through a strand of wet hair and found Asher spreading a fresh cold towel against my face. He left enough of my face uncovered so I could look at him sideways.
How are you feeling?
I had to think about that.
Better.
He replaced the towels down the length of my body, and I realized I was completely nude. I shivered with the cold cloth and didn't care about anything except that I was finally cool.
How long was I out?
Not long,
Asher said, smoothing the towel so that it molded to my legs. I looked at Nathaniel, kneeling in the tub, pinning Damien to the edge so the vampire could hold on to me.
I've never seen a shapeshifter pass out from heat exhaustion before, he said.
A first time for everything, I said. Damien turned his head slowly to look at me. His eyes were clear, bright, alive again. His eyes were the color of emeralds, and it wasn't caused by vampire powers. It was his natural eye color, as if his mother had fooled around with a cat to get him here. People just didn't have that color of eyes. I smiled at him.
You look better.
I fed.
I glanced at Nathaniel. He turned his head so I could see the neat bite marks in the side of his throat.
I think I can support myself, Damien said.
Nathaniel looked a question at Asher, who must have nodded because Nathaniel backed off. Damien settled against me, still holding my arm across his chest, but lightly now. One hand gently on my wrist, the other hand stroked my arm.
I hear you're my master.
I looked into those calm eyes. You don't seem upset. He rubbed his chin and cheek against my arm. It was cat-like and intimate, a lover's gesture. I studied his face, tried to read past those peaceful emerald eyes. Then I realized I didn't have to read his face. The barest thought, and I knew that the peacefulness in his eyes went all the way through. He was filled with a great calmness, a sense of rightness. Calm and peace had never been my reaction to Jean-Claude binding me closer to him. I could feel what Damien was feeling, knew his heart almost better than my own, but I didn't understand him. In that moment, staring into those beautiful, peaceful eyes, I simply had no clue. I would have run for the hills, fought, screamed, hated. I would not have gone quietly into any kind of servitude, no matter how potentially beneficent the ruler. Truthfully, I wasn't 100% sure I was a beneficent ruler. I mean, I was easy to get along with as long as everything went my way, but cross me and I wasn't easy. I was close to being the hardest person I knew, and I know some hard people. I was trying to be softer lately, but trying to be softer and actually being softer aren't the same. I looked into Damien's eyes and knew that if it were me tied to me as master, I'd be scared. Damien turned in the water, kneeling at the tub edge. He leaned in and laid a gentle kiss on my forehead.
You saved me. Again.
He was right, but as his lips touched my skin, I wondered how long he'd be grateful, and when he'd finally realize how screwed we both were. 59. Asher took Damien down to the basement for the day, settling them both in just before dawn. Micah had called, saying that both Merle and Zane would survive. Cherry was going to stay there with Zane, and he had to go check on the rest of his were-leopards. I invited him to bring his leopards over to my house, and he said he'd ask. We didn't say I love you at the end of the conversation, which was unnerving. I wasn't used to sleeping with someone that I didn't love or didn't say I love you to. But I was too tired to think that hard, so I pushed it down where all the other things I don't want to think about live. The place is getting damned crowded. Nathaniel helped me dress in the coolest jammies I had, a silky spaghetti strap nightshirt that would have been too revealing if I hadn't been so damn short. Then Nathaniel cuddled in beside me in a pair of jogging shorts. Gil slept in the guest room. The two were-rat bodyguards divided the night up between the couch and sleeping on the floor in front of the door of my bedroom, which meant if I had to go to the bathroom after we bedded down, I'd have to step over them. Bobby Lee said,
"It'll wake us up. Make sure you don't go wandering around alone."
I couldn't persuade Bobby Lee or Chris that I didn't need that much watching, but truthfully, I was too tired to do much arguing. So we all settled down for a long summer's nap. Nathaniel had closed the heavy curtains so that the room lay in a heavy gray twilight. I settled down in the air-conditioned hush of the bedroom with Nathaniel curled up against my side and fell almost immediately into a deep, dreamless sleep. When the bedside phone shrilled, I knew what it was, but it took me several seconds to wake up enough to move. Nathaniel had actually reached across me and answered,
"Blake residence,"
before I opened my eyes. He was quiet, face very serious. Then he cupped his hand over the receiver and said,
"It's Ulysses, Narcissus's bodyguard. He wants to speak with you."
I took the phone, still lying flat on my back.
"This is Anita. What do you want?"
"My Oba wishes to meet with you."
I moved my head enough to see the clock and groaned. I barely had 2 hours of sleep. I could manage an hour nap and feel okay, or go without sleep, but somewhere between 2 and 3 hours just felt worse.
"I work the night shift, Ulysses. Whatever Narcissus wants can wait until later in the day."
"The word went out yesterday that any information about the missing lycanthropes was to go through you."
That woke me up a little. I blinked and tried to be more awake than I felt.
"What information?"
"He will only talk directly to you."
"Then put him on the phone. I'm all ears."
"He insists that you come down to his club now."
"I have had less than 2 hours of sleep, Ulysses. I am not dragging my ass over to the Illinois side of the river at the crack of dawn. If he has information that can help us save shapeshifters' lives, just give it to me, and I'll see that the info gets to where it needs to go."
"My Oba insists that if you do not come down to the club now, he will not share the information at all."
I sat up, leaning against the headboard, closing my eyes.
"Why now?"
"It is not my way to question my orders."
"Maybe you should work on that," I said.
There was silence on the other end of the phone. I didn't know if he was puzzled and didn't get my comment, or if it had struck too close to home. He finally said in a quiet voice,
"Right now, the lion's Rex is alive. That may not be the case in a few hours."
I sat up, eyes wide, completely awake at last.
"How do you know that?"
"My Oba knows many things."
"Narcissus would really let the lion's Rex die just because I won't come down to the club at the ass crack of dawn?"
My master is very insistent.
Shit, I said softly and with feeling. Tell him I'll be down, but tell him this too. The next time he's in trouble, maybe no one will help him either.
This is more help than he has ever been to any other animal clan.
There was something in Ulysses' voice now. Something. He was lying. I could hear it in his voice. I didn't know if it was vampire powers or werewolf or were-leopard, and I didn't care. The question was, why lie about the fact that the were-hyenas had helped no other shapeshifter group more than this? Why was that worth a lie at all? Narcissus helps out more than he wants people to know, doesn't he? I said.
What makes you say that?
There was a thread of fear, almost panic, in Ulysses' voice. What would it hurt if the lycanthrope community knew that the were-hyenas were helping other animals out? I asked. His breath came out in a long sigh.
Narcissus would never want anyone to think that about the were-hyenas. It would...
He hesitated.
Be bad for business.
If Narcissus is so concerned about Joseph the lion, then why not give me the info over the phone? Ulysses laughed, abrupt, amused.
Narcissus has never given anything away for nothing. There's always a price with him.
So my dragging down to his club on no sleep is the price?
Something like that.
Can I bring my people?
My master would love to see any of your people you care to bring.
I didn't like the phrasing on that. How big of him?
When will you be here?
Ulysses asked. How do you know I'm coming?
Because you know that he's enough of an egotist that if you don't come now, he may not share the information at all. You know he'd let the lion's Rex die just because he's not the same animal we are, and you not coming down now would be an insult.
This clannish shit has got to stop, Ulysses. We need to start helping each other more.
Not my place to change the system, Anita. I'm just trying to survive in it.
He sounded sad. I don't mean to yell at the messenger, Ulysses. I'm just tired of the system. He laughed again, but not like he was happy.
You're tired of the system. Jesus, you have no idea.
When can I tell him to expect you? An hour. Less if I can manage it. I want Joseph alive to see his baby.
His mate will probably lose it like all the others.
I thought you hyenas didn't talk to the lions or anyone else. How do you know about Joseph's baby woes?
Narcissus keeps track of things like that.
Why would he care?
He wants a baby.
That made me raise my eyebrows.
I've never pictured Narcissus as the paternal type. Try maternal.
What?
We'll be waiting for you, Anita. Don't keep him waiting. He doesn't like to be kept waiting.
I heard sorrow in his voice, sorrow bordering on grief. I almost asked what was wrong, but he'd already hung up. What had Narcissus done to him to put that tone in his voice? Did I really want to know? Probably not. Not unless there was something I could do about it, and there wasn't. If I started a war with every harsh lycanthrope master in town, I'd have to kill them all, or almost. The only one who wasn't harsh was Richard, and that was going to get him killed. I complained about Narcissus being too harsh and Richard being too soft. I guess I was just never satisfied. I hung up the phone and told Nathaniel what was happening while I picked out clothes. Nathaniel threw a tank top over the jogging shorts he'd slept in, added jogging shoes, no socks. He knew better than to try and dress because he'd insist on unbraiding his hair and combing it out, which would take all the time the rest of us would need to get dressed. I was wrong. Nathaniel wasn't even close to done with his hair when the rest of us were dressed and ready to go. Bobby Lee and Chris just threw on their shirts and shoes, ran fingers through their short hair, put the holsters back on, and they were ready to go. Gil came down in jeans, jogging shoes, and an untucked men's dress shirt. The shirt looked new, but he didn't keep us waiting. Caleb came down in jeans and nothing else. I didn't bother to tell him to throw a shirt on or shoes. Somehow I didn't think that Narcissus would deny us service because Caleb was underdressed. I actually took the longest getting dressed. Black jeans, red polo shirt, black Nikes, every blade I had, including the new back sheath I'd had made for the largest knife that ran along my spine. The first sheath had gotten cut to pieces by emergency room personnel while they were trying to save my life. I also brought my two handguns, though I wasn't sure that any of us would be allowed to bring guns into the club.
but just in case, I brought them, and I warned Chris and Bobby Lee about the no-guns rule. They flashed their own set of wicked-looking blades, about 3 apiece, and we were ready to go. I thought about calling Christine the were-tiger, but figured since it wasn't quite 7 that I'd let somebody sleep in today. Besides, I didn't know shit yet. When I knew something worth sharing, I'd share. I was halfway to the club when I realized that the ardeur hadn't set in. It was morning. I was awake. There wasn't a stir from the ardeur. Hope flared through me in a warm, fuzzy wash. Maybe the ardeur was going to be temporary. Dear God, I hoped so. I said a brief prayer of thanks and kept monitoring myself for the first hints of unbridled lust. We arrived at Narcissus in chains with me grumpy, but not the least bit lustful. It was a good day. 60. I was able to park right in front of Narcissus in chains. Not only was there no line at 8 a.m., there were no other people in front of the club. The wide sidewalk stretched empty, almost golden in the early morning light. If I'd had time for coffee, I might even have said it was pretty, but I hadn't had time for coffee, so the sunlight was just bright. I had finally broken down and bought sunglasses a few weeks ago. I huddled behind them, wishing I was still in bed. I was so tired I felt fuzzy-headed. I'm usually pretty good at going without sleep. The only thing I could blame the fuzziness on was the heat exhaustion from the night before. Maybe I needed more than 3 hours to recover from it. It made me wonder how bad off I'd have been if I hadn't had all my preternatural powers. A person can die of heat stroke. Nathaniel was at my side, Bobby Lee and Chris a step behind and to either side. Gil and Caleb brought up the rear. The door opened before we could knock. Ulysses ushered us into the darkened club. He was still wearing his leather and metal harness. The smell of it made me wonder if it was the exact same outfit he'd been wearing. Was it 5 or 6 days ago? The tall, dark, and handsome man that I'd met looked hollow-eyed. His strong hands gripped his elbows, hugging his body. When he moved a hand to motion us inside, it shook. What the hell had been going on? 6 other muscular men of varying races and heights stood in the shadows, waiting for Ulysses to tell them what to do. The tension in the room was so thick you could have choked on it. Chris made a hissing sound at my back, and I couldn't blame him. I decided then and there that unless we got some really good explanations, we were keeping the guns. There was an air of desperation about all the were-hyenas, as if something really bad had happened. The door was shut behind us, but we were close to it, and no one was between us and it. I wanted to save the lion, Joseph, but not enough to risk myself and my people. If it was a choice, I knew who I'd choose. Cold, maybe, but I'd never met Joseph the were-lion. He wasn't real to me yet, and everyone with me was. Ulysses must have seen or smelled something on us, because he explained.
Our master has seen fit to punish us.
What for? I asked. He shook his head.
That is personal.
Fine, let's talk to Narcissus, and you guys can get back to punishing yourselves.
We are not punishing ourselves,
Ulysses said. I shrugged. Look, I don't believe in letting anyone push me around to this degree, but it's not my deal, it's yours. So let's share information and let us get out of here. Something crossed Ulysses' face, some emotion that I couldn't read.
No guns in the club. That's the rule.
I think we'll keep our guns,
Bobby Lee said. I glanced at him, and the look was enough. He shut up, but smiled at me. Actually, I agree with him. We're not giving up our guns today. Ulysses shook his head.
I can't fail my master in this, Anita. You have no idea what he'll do to us if we let you inside with guns.
I glanced at the men standing around in the shadowed room. Fear rolled off of them in waves. Their bodies were tight with tension. I'd never seen so many men so thoroughly whipped before. They would do exactly what they were told to do because they were terrified to do anything else. I'd been told that a good dominant was a caring partner. Maybe Narcissus wasn't a good dom. Maybe he was a bad one. I'm sorry, Ulysses, really, I don't want to cause you pain, but if Narcissus has gone crazy enough to make all of you this scared, then we keep the guns.
Please, Anita. Please.
He must have seen something on my face that let him know I wasn't going to give in, because he dropped to his knees in front of me. The sound of his knees hitting the floor was sharp, made me wince. He'd kept his hands wrapped on his arms, so that he just dropped without catching himself at all.
Please, Anita.
I shook my head, staring into those haunted eyes. Tears glimmered down his cheeks.
Please, Anita, please. You don't know what he'll do to our lovers if we fail him.
Lovers? I made it a question. It took him two tries to say,
Ajax is my lover. We've been together 4 years. Please, Anita, I don't have any right to ask this, but please give up your guns.
I shook my head. I'm sorry, Ulysses, really, I am, but the more you talk, the more I want to keep my guns. He moved so suddenly that I didn't have time to react, and Chris and Bobby Lee both cleared their guns, but Ulysses wasn't trying to hurt me. He wrapped his arms around me, buried his face in my chest, and wept and begged. He stank of fear and blood and worse things. Put up the guns, boys. He's not trying to hurt me. They put their guns up, but they didn't look happy. But then neither, I suppose, did I. I touched Ulysses' head, but he just kept saying,
Please, please, please.
You guys can all come with us. Just walk out with us. Bobby Lee whispered,
This is not a good idea.
I don't care. Nobody deserves to be treated like this.
What you gonna do, Anita, offer them all sanctuary? We didn't bring that many guns, he said.
If the other were-hyenas object, we leave them. I didn't bring us out here to get killed, but if we can, we take them with us. Bobby Lee shook his head.
You make your life hard, Anita. You make your life very hard.
So I've been told. Ulysses just clung to me, crying, begging. I had to grab his face and make him look at me, and even then his eyes didn't focus. It took almost a full minute for him to see me. You can come with us, Ulysses, all of you. Just walk out. He shook his head.
They have our lovers. You don't know what they'll do. You can't know.
They? A rifle shot exploded from somewhere in the room. I had the Browning halfway out of its holster when Chris staggered backwards. Blood sprayed out his back onto Caleb and Gil. Gil started screaming. I had to turn away before Chris hit the floor. Bobby Lee said,
Three on the catwalk with rifles. Fuck, girl, we've walked into it.
I looked where he was looking and could barely make out the shapes. If I was supposed to be the kitty cat, why did the rat have better night vision? Ulysses was whispering over and over,
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
I put the barrel against his forehead. Whatever else happens, Ulysses, you die next. A man's voice came out of the darkness. He was speaking over a sound system, that much I could tell.
If you pull the trigger, we will kill your other bodyguard. Rifles with silver shot, Ms. Blake, and I assure you that my people are dead shots. Now put your guns down and we'll talk.
I kept my gun and told Ulysses, Get away from me, now! He crawled away, still crying. I picked out the shadowy form on my side of the catwalk. Bobby Lee was aimed to the other side, which left one man in the middle without a gun on him. But from this distance, with them above us, we had to make each shot count, which meant that we had to kill what we could, then hope we could do something with the last one.
Who the hell are you? I asked.
Drop your guns, Ms. Blake, and I'll tell you.
We keep our guns, girl, Bobby Lee said. He's going to kill us either way.
I agreed.
We don't want you dead, Ms. Blake, but we don't give a shit about your friends. We can just keep picking them off until you change your mind.
I moved to stand in front of everyone so that the middle shot was harder. From the above angle, I couldn't block them completely, but it was the best I could do.
Everybody get down.
Only Bobby Lee hesitated.
They don't want me dead, and I need your gun.
He glanced at me, then dropped to one knee, using me to shield himself from the middle gunman. He'd grasped my plan. Everyone else was hugging the floor. There was no cover, and the door was close, but not close enough, what with three rifles on us.
"What are you doing, Miss Blake?"
the voice asked. "Just testing a theory," I said.
"Don't be stupid, Miss Blake."
"Bobby Lee," I said.
"Yes, ma'am."
"How good are you?"
"Give the word, we'll find out."
I felt my body go very, very still, so that the world narrowed down to the end of my gun and that shape crouched on the catwalk. It was about 10 yards. I'd hit targets further away than that, but that was target shooting. I'd never tried to drop a man with a handgun from this distance. I let out the last of my breath so that I was just stillness, just the gun, just the point of the gun, just the aim of the gun. And with the last, barest touch of my voice, I whispered, "Word." Our guns went off almost simultaneously. I didn't shoot just once. I fired as fast as I could pull the trigger. My finger jerked. The target came out of his crouch, then fell slowly off the catwalk. I turned my gun before the body hit the ground and found the man in the middle standing up. I saw the shadow of his rifle. I heard the voice shouting over the explosion of gunshots,
"Don't hit her! Don't you dare!"
The rifle plowed up the floor inches from me, 2 shots, trying to get me to move and give him a shot at Bobby Lee, but I stood my ground and fired back. Bobby was firing with me, and the shadow form jerked, staggered, then slumped forward, his rifle falling to land on the floor with the other 2 bodies of the now-dead rifleman. The voice said,
"Boys, do not disappoint me."
The were-hyenas rushed us. Bobby Lee and I started shooting. We divided the 6 were-hyenas up between us, smooth, no crossfires, no taking the other's hit. My side of the room, his side of the room. I took 2, I think he took 1, and we both clicked empty. I drew the Firestar left-handed, which made it about 2 seconds slower than it needed to be, but it was probably faster than popping the clip on the Browning and reloading. If I survived, I'd have to time which one was faster. It was Ulysses who was almost upon me like a dark shape of doom. A gun exploded at my back, and Ulysses fell backwards onto the floor. I whirled to find Nathaniel with a gun. His eyes were wide, his lips parted, a look of astonishment on his face. He'd picked up Chris's dropped weapon. Movement turned me back to the fight. Metal flashed as Bobby Lee waded into the last 2 were-hyenas. The fight was too intense. I couldn't get a clear shot. The far doors opened and men poured out. I rushed the fight around Bobby Lee and fired almost point blank into someone's back. The man shuddered and dropped, putting me face to face with Bobby Lee. It had startled him, and I had to fire across his body into the last of the fightees. I pointed the Firestar at the were-hyenas pouring towards us. I emptied the gun into them as we all started backing for the door. I wasn't as good left-handed. I don't think I killed anyone, but I wounded someone with every shot, and it slowed them, made them hesitate. Gil, Caleb, and Nathaniel were already at the doors. Daylight spilled in, and I was dazzled for a second because my sunglasses were still tucked across the front of my shirt. I dropped the Firestar, popped the empty clip from the Browning, and had the second clip pounded home before we made the sidewalk. I still couldn't hear the noise of the clips hitting home, but I saw Bobby Lee making the same movement with his gun that I'd made with mine. I knew he was locked and loaded. I yelled, "Nathaniel, Jeep, get it running!" I knew he knew where the extra set of keys were. I remembered Narcissus saying that there were over 500 were-hyenas. We had to get out of there before they decided to pick up more guns or just overwhelm us with numbers. Shooting them would slow them down, but whoever that voice had been, he had them terrified. I could kill them, but I couldn't terrorize them. Whether they poured out of that door in a wave would depend on whether they feared death or terror more. I glanced back to find Nathaniel in the Jeep with Caleb and Gil in the back. The engine roared to life. Bobby Lee and I started for the Jeep, and the were-hyenas rolled out into the sunlight, too many to count, almost too many to aim at. I fired into the mass of bodies, and I yelled, "Run!" Bobby Lee and I were running for the Jeep, which meant our aim wasn't what it should have been, but the men were packed so tight that we kept hitting them anyway.
They'd fall, then there'd be screams, sounds, a chittering laughter that raised the hair at the back of my neck, and the wounded rose as hyena men, muscled, pale-furred, spotted, with a muzzle full of fangs and claws like black knives. We weren't whittling them down. We were giving them better weapons to use against us. Nathaniel yelled, "Get in!" I glanced back to find the door.